Welcome to Webcams TV. I'm your host, Corey Fowler. Joining us today, Saurabh.
Yes.
Excellent. And you're from the caching team.
Yes, from the Azure Cache team. Yes.
Azure Cache team. And where does that kind of sit under? Is it like all, it's well, AAPT is the thing, but...
Yeah, so within the larger Azure organization, we are in the app platform team. And then my team in particular owns ASP.NET, so web-focused, I guess, development tools focused on the web.
Yep.
And from a service perspective, we own cache, because it's a service actually requested the most by web developers, and that's where it falls in, within our charter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the reason you're on the show today,
yes.
Because our show is all about web technologies.
Absolutely, and we love web technologies.
Brilliant. So you're here to talk to us today about the new Redis cache service.
Yes.
And this is really exciting, because it is one of those technologies that everyone's been getting excited about, and we've gone and made this service, and it's now available in preview.
Absolutely.
That's brilliant. So do you want to kind of give us a quick introduction to Redis? Because I know a good portion of our viewers are going to know, but maybe not everyone. So let's kind of understand what Redis is, what you can do with it, and then we can jump into some demos a little bit later on.
Okay, makes sense. And I mean, when I took over this role of Azure Cache about 6 months to 8 months back, and to be honest, Redis was new to me. You've heard of Memcache, you've heard of the granddaddy of caches. We had a proprietary cache on Azure as well, the App Fabric cache, but I hadn't played around with Redis yet. And I've been greatly impressed the few months I've spent on it. One thing you'll notice about Redis, is its great open source community, the excitement around it, and the fact that it's taken cache as we know it, and it's made it cache plus plus, cache on Drux. You'll hear a lot of these terms thrown around for Redis. It's essentially changed the game.
Yeah.
There was cache before Redis, and there's caching after Redis.
Yeah.
So here we are on the redis.io page, a great resource to get started for anything about Redis. Here's how they describe themselves. Open source BSD licensed, advanced key value store. So what we think of a cache, put a key in with a value, get it out very quickly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So Redis does all that. But in addition, it also is a data structure service. So you don't only have to deal with key values, you can deal with top level data structures, which makes your life much easier. Mm. Think of it as compute along with your data.
Yeah.
So now when you, again, a typical leaderboard scenario, you put in a score, you don't need to sort it yourself. Redis will do it for you, and will do it in a very performant fashion.
Yeah.
And this is the gateway drug for Redis. A lot of people you talk to on why you started using Redis, data structures. So people come for data structures, and then they stay for a lot more.
Yeah.
But this is what made Redis really popular. And we can look at what this lot more looks like. So again, Redis.io, great resource. It has support for features like transactions, pops up, publish, subscribe fashion. Now it's not the traditional high reliability pops up. It's more of a high performance pops up where you're fine with losing a few messages, but you want them broadcasted as quickly as possible to a wide range of people.
So it's almost like sending a UDP message.
Pretty much.
You're
sending
it out there, you don't really care if it arrives or not, but it's supposed to get there as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and this pattern I think applies to all of Redis as well. The reason it's more of a cache is that with any architectural big design, you have to make a few compromises. And in the case of Redis, they've always optimized for performance.
Yeah.
And that sometimes comes at the expense of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It is eventually consistent, but it's not a persistent database. It is not MongoDB. Mm. You will find a lot of this philosophical debate between Redis and NoSQL DBs.
Yeah.
But Redis is a cache from a perspective of performance comes first, persistence, consistency is loose consistent.
Yeah.
So that's the piece, transactions, pops up, Lua skip ring. You can set limited time to live for each key.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be able to go through all the details of Redis. That would be a 1 hour show by itself.
Oh, yeah.
But again, highly encourage folks to check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So how did you get started with building the Redis cache? Like, obviously, open source project works on Linux, works on Windows?
It does, yes. So our friends at MS OpenTech had made our life a bit easier. Over the last few years, I believe it's been 2 years, they've been maintaining a port of Redis on Windows. So, and it's been popular there. You look at their GitHub page, you can follow their repo.
Mm-hmm.
You can contribute to it. So it's been their life for a while. They have a community around it. And we've taken that and hosted that on Azure. And
excellent.
We are also contributing back to this project.
Great.
So you can always do the GitHub repo. What they also do is they have NuGet packages now.
Oh, brilliant.
I guess we'll post this link somewhere for...
Yeah. So for everyone else that's watching the show, instead of like trying to scribble down the link as quickly as possible, we'll actually have them just below the video screen here. So just scroll down and click on the show links.
Okay, perfect. So they also have a NuGet package now. So if you don't want to go in GitHub and compile the code yourself, they give you the server and client exes in 32-bit and 64-bit.
Brilliant.
And you can just get it from there. And we'll be playing with that later in the show.
Awesome.
So yes, we are building on the great work done by MS OpenTech.
Brilliant. Awesome. So the service is in preview.
Yes.
Right? So that means that typically when things are in preview, it's free to use.
Yes.
So in a free kind of capacity, what kind of size do I have for this cache? Are there any features? Like, is it fully featured Redis as a service in preview right now?
So on Azure today, we have a Redis preview out. As Corey mentioned, it's free for a limited time. We do plan to start charging during the preview time as well. And the standard pattern in Azure being we'll charge half price until we have it generally available.
Mm-hmm.
For free tier, we offer a 250 MB and a 1 GB cache.
Okay.
Soon down the line, we'll plan to offer larger size caches in the preview itself when we do charge. And then by the time we go to GA, we'll be offering much larger size caches. And I'll talk a little bit more when I get into actually building the cache and demoing that.
Great. Awesome. Do you have a list of the sizes that you're thinking of, or?
Absolutely. So if folks just go to the pricing details page, we already have the preview. Though the preview is free for a limited time, the eventual pricing has already been published. And here we already list sizes up to 26 GB and their corresponding prices.
Mm-hmm.
But we will be offering sizes, hopefully even larger than 26 GB down the line.
Excellent. OK, so that's great. That's on WindowsAzure.com. We're going to have the link below.
Yes.
So I'm interested, like, can we get a quick little introduction to Redis for, like, we did a great job of conceptually introducing it, but let's look at some practical, let's actually fire up the server and do a couple of pings and look at the data structure and caching components.
Absolutely. In my C:\tools directory, I already have a Redis server.exe. This is the one that comes from the NuGet package. And to run it, all you need to do is physically run it, and that's it. You now have a Redis server on your local machine, no MSI, no setting up a cluster to host Redis.
Yep.
It actually is a single process server running there, running with default configuration.
Yep.
You can pass in a config file and naturally tweak how you run the server.
Yep.
But here, I just have it running on default configuration.
This is great, because this is nice and easy to get going. Like, nothing better than double-clicking and you're all ready to go.
Absolutely. And this is, even if you are primarily focused on Azure development, you will have scenarios where you want to do local development on the plane, for example.
And, definitely.
This will be a great tool.
Yeah.
And so the counterpart to that is the Redis client, another great tool for development. We'll go to my folder, and then I'll run the Redis client.
Yep.
There, I have the Redis server running. I have the Redis client running now. Because both will launch with default configuration, they're already talking to each other. I did a ping, I get a pong back, I'm all set up.
Brilliant.
Let's do our first set. A typical cache demo, you have to have webcams TV, is that right?
Yep.
I don't know if you had an S or no.
Nope.
And we'll do hello world.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then you do keys. We can actually do a get on
webcams TV.
And there, hello world comes back. So we've launched a server, done a client, done our hello world.
Brilliant.
You can list all the keys in here. There, we only have webcams TV so far. Key star, I can flush all. So a great Redis client.exe, a great tool to learn Redis. Again, on redis.io, you'll see a list of commands that Redis supports.
Mm-hmm.
All of them naturally supported during the client as well. So a great learning tool.
Yep.
Another feel I wanted to quickly mention was just to give people a very quick feel of what these data structures look like. Mm-hmm. We'll look at what a set looks like.
Yep.
So if I want to create a set, all I need to do is do sadd, that is add to set.
Mm-hmm.
Create an example of a set. In this case, I'm doing cities, California.
Yep.
You'll find this convention followed quite a bit in Redis with almost like namespace class. You have cities and then California, well, SF, LA. So these are all the cities in California. Three of them got set. If I do something similar for, let's say, Florida, what do you have? Miami, yeah, Miami, Tampa, and I hear there's Oakland there as well. And now you see where I'm going with this. Yeah.
Yep.
And now you can do an intersection between the two sets that you had.
Mm-hmm. So that one you might have an issue with because I think you misspelled Oakland there.
And did I misspell it consistently?
Yeah, you did misspell it consistently.
So I did see I misspelled it once, so I continued with that.
Cool.
So at least you get the point. Yep. You can do an intersection here. Would it be possible to do it with just a key value store? Absolutely. You'd be writing more code.
Yeah,
and Redis now just does it for you. Again, a very quick flavor of what data structures can do.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll come back and do more data structures with Corey later.
Cool. No, that's awesome.
So this is, we've looked at it locally. Mm-hmm. I'd love to show people how you can now connect to a Redis cache. Should we do that next?
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm just itching to show my Azure stuff. So we created the local cache. Now to create something similar on Azure, we are on the new Azure portal, mm-hmm. also known as the preview Azure portal.
Yep.
We're a new service and we are only on the new preview portal. So portal.azure.com.
If you do go to, if you do end up going to the old portal, if you go into cache, because there is an item there for it, it will just redirect you. So if you're used to going into manage.azure.com, not a problem, it will forward you over to here and you can go and create your cache.
Absolutely. Yep. Good point, Corey. Thank you. So let's create a new one, Redis cache preview. Oh, it brings out what they call a blade in this new portal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had a, if you're interested in learning more about the new portal, last week I published a show with Vishal.
Oh, perfect.
Just going through the whole portal experience and introducing blades and journeys and all that. So excellent.
Perfect. So yeah, this is a blade for cache. You give it a name. Webcams TV. I already have that created, so let's call it Webcams TV 1. Mm-hmm. To what Corey had mentioned earlier, from a pricing perspective, in our preview, we offer two sizes, 250 MB and 1 GB. We also offer two SKUs, a basic and a standard SKU.
Mm-hmm.
So think of basic as you take, I guess similar to what we were doing, running a Redis EXE locally. We are launching one Redis server for you. With standard, we launch a replication server as well.
Mm-hmm.
Redis has a concept of master-slave, yep. where the slave is kept in sync with the master. So we launch a replicated node for you, which stays in sync with the master. And if the master goes down, the slave then takes over.
Yeah.
And I'll spend some time later in the video talking about that.
And is that slave switch an automatic switch, or is that something that you'd have to programmatically do?
So for Redis in general, it's something you need to do programmatically, but in Azure, we actually handle it for you. So one of the benefits you get by Azure hosting is that you don't have to worry about any of this.
Yeah.
We keep a heartbeat, we switch it off automatically for you.
Brilliant, and that's a great value add to be able to go there, and if you are going and using this cache, you have that backup. So if the master goes down, it automatically flips over, you can still read from the cache. Will you be able to write from the slave? Like, does the slave get elected as a master?
Yeah, once the slave gets elected as the master, you can write to it.
Yep.
We don't support scenarios where you can write to master while it is still just, write to slave and it is still a slave.
Yeah.
So today we only allow writing to master, and then naturally on the promotion of slave to master, you can write to it again.
Brilliant.
Yep. And again, we will demo that.
Yep.
And that's pretty much it. You choose a name, you choose a pricing tier, you choose a location.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have four locations that we support, two in Europe, two in the US. More are coming very soon.
Mm-hmm.
The reason location is important is that a typical usage pattern is a web app, so an Azure website, talking to cache. You want both of them to be in the same region,
yep.
because the best performance characteristic for cache come in the same Azure region.
Yeah.
So
well, there's two, you can keep going through on this, I'll just jump in here. There's two different kind of ways to look at things in the cloud. There's the code near scenario, which means whatever you're connecting to is right close yes. to your code, so usually in the same data center. And then there's a code far scenario where your code and your database live in two separate data centers.
Yes.
And caching is definitely one of those things that you want to be in code near.
Absolutely.
So it's lightning fast. You don't have much latency between actually going, or your users using it, and the cache layer actually going and storing those values.
No, makes perfect sense. And even taken to the, I guess, logical next conclusion is the typical pattern is you have website. you have, I guess, even nearer than near, which is on your own instance. You're using a local cache.
Yep.
Then you back it up with a Redis distributed cache so that different instances can talk to it.
Yep.
And these are in turn backed up by a persistent storage, which could be in a different data center, and because you absolutely don't want to lose that data.
Yep.
So yeah, multi-tier approach makes perfect sense when you want something that's scalable and reliable.
Yep. And thinking of that, one of those multi-tier approaches is session state.
Absolutely.
Because session state, you usually save local.
Yep.
You back up onto a service. Yep. And you can potentially back it up even further.
Yep, and the good
something tells me you have a demo about this. If you
we have a demo of that as well. So where we can have a session state provider that backs up stuff to Redis automatically.
Yep.
So here's I won't be creating a cache here just because I already have one pre-created. So once you have a cache created, you get a blade for the cache, and the only thing you need to connect to it is its host name, which you chose, the webcams TV dot. redis.cache.windows.net, and a key to be able to connect to it. We support connection both via direct connection using the key or via SSL.
Okay.
So that's another addition that we've done on top of the Redis protocol, is to add SSL support, so to make sure that you're not sending your authentication token over clear text.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, so let's use this cache then. I'll connect to it just in a hello world scenario from the client that we have, and then I'll jump into the session state.
Great. Demo. No, that sounds great. It's good to introduce kind of using local tools so people can actually test locally against the cache as well.
Yep.
Okay.
So we'll connect to that. We'll connect to that cache. I already have a connection string for it. Get a CLI. There. So it's the host name. The authentication token, and now we're connected to the remote cache. Again, ping pong, we've seen this
excellent
before. We can do a set similar to the one we did before.
Yep.
Now, this was connecting to the cache using Redis CLI.
Yep.
Actually, another important, interesting thing with Redis CLI is info command, which gives you a bunch of information on your cache. And it also takes a subsection if you want very specific information. So info replication will tell you, here's a cache. This was a standard cache, so it has one master and one slave.
Yep.
Another bunch of information around that. So again, Redis CLI would be your friend going forward.
Excellent. But it's a good way to go and diagnose things.
Yes, but you need to build something as well. And that for that, you need an actual C# client. You need a client in the language of your choice.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Again, Redis.io. Clients. Like I mentioned, one big thing about Redis is its rich ecosystem, and that shows the most in the support they have for clients.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of languages have Redis clients already. There's a concept of, I'm still going. And there's a concept of recommended clients.
Yep.
So for C#, there are a set of clients, and two of them get the recommended tag from Redis.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Perl, Smalltalk, C#. Node, all the different languages that we support on Azure, which is good.
Yep.
But we're going to show off C#.
We're going to show off C#. Yes, yep. I'm going to stick to that here. We can, but we had people build Node applications internally with the Node, with PHP. There's a pRedis client that was great with us as well. So again, and even in the C# world, I'd encourage someone watching the video right now to build their own client, contribute to this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe your client will be the recommended client soon.
Yeah.
So we have servicestack.redis. Which is a paid offering. Mm-hmm. And then we have stackexchange.redis, again, used by the Stack Exchange folks, which is a .NET shop running Redis.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want an example of a successful live .NET enterprise running Redis, you have Stack Exchange.
Yep.
And they've built this client. So that's the one I'll be using in this demo.
Cool. So we're firing up Visual Studio. I'm guessing the client's going to be available in the NuGet package?
Yes, exactly. So the client is available as a NuGet package. For now, I might even just make it into, we'll just make a console app and talk to it.
Mm-hmm.
Just something simple. So I'm launching a console application. Next, we'll go and get the package for stackexchange.redis,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll see what it means to connect to the cache.
Okay. So you're going and using the Package Manager console, which I have to say is my favorite way of going and getting things.
You can.
But if anyone out there is using the GUI, you can use that as well. I'm just a command line kind of person, and I have a feeling that you're a command kind of person as well. So it's really good. And this actually has tab completion as well, which is really cool.
Yes.
Yep.
Again, all you need to know, either you do GUI or this, is tagExchange.redis, and that's the package you're looking for.
Yep.
So we'll install the package, we'll add the right using statement, and then we'll do a hello world with a C# client. So here, it got added, the using statement, tagExchange.redis. Now to connect to the cache. The way the programming paradigm looks like in StackExchange client is that there is a connection multiplexer. Mm-hmm. So you create a connection, and you essentially keep it static, and you maintain it over the lifetime of the application.
Yep.
I might not go into different patterns around it, but again, in your notes on the video, we'll put an end-to-end demo of an MVC application using Redis, and that goes into a little bit more details on the static pattern.
Brilliant.
But you would maintain the connection statically, so you don't have to reconnect every time.
Yep.
That's what connection multiplexer gives you. So I'll create the connection multiplexer class, and then I'll connect to the cache. Again, no surprise, it mm-hmm. requires two things. It requires, and let's get them from the portal this time.
Yep.
So all you need to know is the host name you're connecting to.
Yep.
I'll put SSL equal to true, so that's what we recommend.
Excellent. That was what I was going to ask, the SSL.
Yep. SSL equal to
there
true. And then all you need to do is put the password. And that you get from the keys section.
Awesome. Yeah, that was actually going to be my first question. It's like, oh, so we support SSL. Does the client support it as well? So
yeah, the client supports it. We've worked closely with the client to make sure that it's also trivial to use it.
Yep.
You don't need to provide any ports. We have the right default ports in there. So all you've done now is created a connection to this cache.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you need to do is, I should
are
have
those
had codes
strings?
Here. Yeah. There you go. And the next thing you need to do is, Redis has a concept of databases for each cache.
Mm-hmm.
Now think of these just as a logical partitioning of your cache. So if you want to have a set of logical data live together, one common example being you have multiple applications using the same cache, each of them gets its own database in that cache.
Yeah.
And it's a numeric value, you have a database 0, database 1. But for folks who don't care, you can just do get database and just use the cache with one single database.
Yep.
And what this gives you is an iDatabase object, which essentially is your cache that you will talk to. So again, connectionmultiplexer.connect, mm-hmm. you pass in the host name and password, you get the default database, and you're done.
Brilliant.
Now all you need to do is do I'll do a string set.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do a cache dot string set.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing like we did earlier, we'll do webcams TV. We'll do hello world. So this time, we have the same thing from a client.
Brilliant.
You can also provide a time span. So you can actually give a timeout value for each key. So you can have multiple timeouts based on which key, and that's where your eviction policy will set in. Again, a lot of goodness in Redis. Let's say we do 10 seconds.
Will we be able to read it faster?
I mean, most likely not yet.
No.
But you can send a timestamp for each of those individual items.
Yep.
So that's it. And I guess we didn't really do much in terms of UI, but when you run this application, it'll connect to the cache, and you're pretty much done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could actually go back into your CLI tool and read it, which is exactly what you're going to do. I love how we're just like completely connected on what the demos are going to be.
Yeah, so we can connect, and then we can connect to the cache, and then just see the keys that got set, and there it is, webcam TV.
Brilliant.
So we've got a cache, we've connected to it using a client. Again, we did C#. You can do it in any language of your choice.
Yep.
So what I'd like to do next is talk a bit about what Azure gives you in addition to just hosting it for you.
Yep.
So there's two things I'd like to talk about. One is we handle the master-slave replication for you, and we handle monitoring and alerting, which just comes for free from being part of our platform.
Oh, nice.
So I'd like to talk about that next.
Cool.
actually, before that, let's do session state. I forgot about that.
Yes.
Okay. So session state. So for folks familiar with session state, a very core concept to web forms, you can store your session data via provider in any storage. We have providers for SQL. So this one would be a provider for cache. Mm-hmm. Again, being cache, it would not be persistent session state. So you need to be aware that a cache can always go down. So you need to build your application to be able to handle that scenario. And we are also working on a session state provider that will be Redis cache, then backed by table.
Okay.
So if you don't find it in cache, we'll go to table and bring it back for you, the data. Mm-hmm. But today, the one I'm demoing is cache only.
Great. Well, you get that set up. Let me just kind of clear through some of these. So what you said there is we have a new cache provider. The caching provider speaks directly to the Redis cache.
Yes.
So it takes it off the box, goes directly to Redis cache. But you're working on another provider that goes from web application to Redis to Azure Table Storage.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yep.
Awesome.
So what I have here is an application. It's a blank file new ASP.NET web forms application. I haven't touched it yet.
Yep.
What I'll do is the first thing, via the package manager console, we'll install the package for our session state provider.
Yep.
And so install package. I put the pre-tab because this is still a pre-release.
Okay, that's important. If you're going to do this and you get an error message, look back to see if there is the dash pre-tag, or switch over to the GUI and switch, and you should be able to get it.
And this one is web.microsoft.redis session state provider.
Is it web.microsoft or is it microsoft.web.redis? I'm just thinking the other namespaces.
You are absolutely right.
Brilliant. So microsoft.web.redis session state provider. It's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's nice and easy to type or use the tab completion. And within a few seconds here, you should have it pulled down from NuGet and ready to use.
Absolutely. There it goes.
Cool. And it uses the Stack Exchange client, I see, so that's cool. We just showed that off.
Yes, exactly. So this is built on top of the Stack Exchange client.
Yep.
We are looking at, again, we love for feedback, potentially having a provider model that if you wanted to put a different client in there, you can do that as well.
Cool.
But today is built on the Stack Exchange for Redis client.
Yep.
And all this does is naturally add the relevant assemblies, mm-hmm. but it also makes the entries for you in web.config.
Brilliant. I love when things just automatically kind of configure themselves, and that's really the power of NuGet in action.
Yep.
Right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have no idea how we did programming before NuGet. So here's a session state provider. It adds a section describing what are the different parameters you can set, mm-hmm. or you can just use the default, which connects to the default server.
Yep.
Let's see if we still have our server running. Or if not, we'll launch. What should we do? So we do still have a server running, so we don't even have to change anything. Mm-hmm. We could choose to run it against the Azure server. That works great as well.
Yep.
All you need to do, which you guys now know very well, is provide host, provide port, provide access key, SSL, true, false,
yep.
and they are all set. I'll quickly talk about a few other additional parameters we support. We support string name. So if you have multiple applications writing to the same cache, mm-hmm. you can naturally just differentiate them by providing an application name. That'll be used by the session state provider. The database ID, like I mentioned, Redis concept of databases.
Yep.
Two and other.
That's an integer.
That's yes. an integer, okay. yes, yes. Great. The way Redis has it is just a number.
Yep.
A few other improvements which I think will be really appreciated by the community. Feedback that we've got on session state providers in the past is that if the backup store blows up, which is a likelihood for cache sometime because it's not persistent storage, your cache might go down, it would just throw an exception and your application would come down. Now we let you prepare for that scenario. You can say to not throw on errors.
Okay.
We'll just inform you. And you can imagine a scenario where, hey, if it's not in cache, you now go and get it from persistent storage.
Yeah.
Your website loads a little slower, but at least it doesn't blow up on the user.
It doesn't fall over, yeah.
So I think it's a great improvement to the larger session state pattern.
Cool.
Other is retry. And this works both ways. We've heard feedback where if we retry, some folks like that. But at the same time, some people prefer a fast fail. if the cache is down, they'd rather know immediately so they can go back to persistent storage, mm-hmm. while some might want to retry a few times because they're relying completely on cache. So now we make you allow you to configure that.
Now, is this, like, it says retry timeout in milliseconds. Is this a standard retry, or man, I always forget this. I just had it on the tip of my tongue, too. Is this an exponential retry? So it'll try 3 seconds, and then 6 seconds, and
then 9 seconds. This one is, it's just a standard retry.
Well, I mean, that's good to know. Sense, at least you know, hey, within 5 seconds, it's going to retry, and it'll be 5 seconds. And then do you have the number of retries before it does actually fall over?
Yeah, so it tries, it will try out for that long, and then it just blow up.
One retry, and then it's going to...
Yeah, so it'll retry for, I actually have to look at the detail of that. It tries at a regular interval for these many seconds, and then it blows over.
Okay.
That's a good point. I don't know what that regular interval is. I think it's at every failure it retries, however long it takes, and we haven't hard-coded that.
Okay, great.
A database ID, application name. So this one, what we could do here, I think I have that page open already. Is what I'm going to do is anytime user tries to log in, mm-hmm. we'll save the time of login into session state. Mm-hmm. Just an example of what session state can give you.
So is this when it's an invalid login attempt, you go, hey, we've tried once, twice, three times, let's shut this user down?
That could be it as well.
Yeah.
This could be it as well. This is a bit contrived. It's essentially, in your session state, you want to keep what time they logged in.
Yep.
What you typically do with session state would be your shopping cart scenario, and that's the type of scenario that would go in there.
Yeah.
I chose this because we have a blog post that goes into details of this as well. Another thing we can add in the video notes.
Excellent.
And you'd rather do it on successful login. For right now, I'm just putting it here on any login attempt. Mm-hmm. And we just run the application.
Nice, standard, beautiful ASP.NET page loading up.
Exactly.
Now.
And as you can guess, what we'll do next is connect to it from our Redis client.
Yep.
And
currently, this is going to the local client, right?
No, it actually isn't. So I'm going to make it go to local.
Okay, yep.
Yes, we had it talking to Azure. We'll just make it go to local. And the session state is going to the local one, yes?
Yes.
And because I'm too lazy to register and do the right stuff here, we'll do an attempt at login. And that should cause our session state data to be hit. It should put in the Redis cache, in this case running locally, but mm-hmm. equally relevant for anything on Azure. And then we should be able to see the same thing once this completes So you'll see this here. Actually, let me do a. We had the cities from before.
Yep.
Here's the session state data.
Yep. And that's the session token and data.
Exactly.
Yep.
So now let's look at the keys that got set. And here's the session state token. Now we didn't set an application name, or that would have shown up here as well.
Okay.
Make sure we copy it. Hopefully I did. There I did. And we can do a edge get all in here. And another Redis command.
Okay,
and then show me the contents of that particular entry in there, which is the name login time, essentially the hash, and then the login time stored there.
So just to clarify things here, so when we were looking at sets, we had s add.
Yes.
And now we're looking at h get, which I'm guessing is a hash get.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
Exactly. So the first alphabet of the corresponding data structure, followed by the command that you're doing on it.
Brilliant.
Yeah. You got it, Corey. It is very intuitive though in general. Once you get used to the pattern, I guess with any successful software, once you get used to the patterns they follow, it just becomes intuitive.
Well, and I think that speaks to the brilliance of what Redis, what the people that wrote Redis have done, is it has a very small learning curve. So you can literally go out, you're looking at the different patterns. It's a very consistent way of interacting with it. And some of the commands just start to flow off your fingertips. You don't even have to think about it after some time. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant.
And I cannot de-emphasize I cannot emphasize more the value of the community around it as well.
Yes.
You'll soon find that you'll be doing repetitive actions on Redis that you will then end up just building a library for and then sharing it with the community, and they share something back, and then it just grows and grows. For .NET, it's not yet as rich. You'll see a much richer set of libraries for PHP and Ruby, but we're hoping for .NET pretty soon.
Yep.
It'll catch up as well.
Excellent.
So this was session state. Mm-hmm. Next, what I had mentioned a bit earlier, let's talk about what additional hosting benefits Azure offers you on top of just taking Redis and running it. So I mentioned two. One of them is replication. So if you use a standard SKU cache, and if you remember what you mentioned was standard SKU, was that you get a master and a slave, and we maintain replication between them. What I've done in this scenario is I'm actually showing you what, this is a cache I've deployed in a test environment.
Okay.
But this is what a cache that you deploy looks like from an internal Microsoft perspective. We internally end up hosting two worker roles that back up your cache. And
that's cool.
So one of them will be at any given point a master. The second one will be a slave. So in this case, let's connect to this cache. And so it's Redis CLI.exe. This cache I have is a replication cache. Let me paste it. So here I'm connected to it. If you remember info, replication. We will always connect to a master because we maintain a shim, and the user always connects to a master.
Yep.
And it'll have one slave because it's a standard SKU. Now I'll do some internal only magic, but the thing is I'm connecting using a custom port to one of those nodes directly. So now you saw we had two web roles there, two worker roles. I'm connecting to one of them directly. Now if I do info replication, the one on port 13,000 was the master.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to connect to the one on 13,001. Info replication is the slave.
Cool.
The 13,000 is master, 13,001 is slave right now. If master goes down, it'll reverse.
And this is, like you actually showed us, hey, I went and deployed this in my own instance. And so
please
these
do not do this at home, yes.
You can't do this at home.
Yes, we will, right? yes. This is, you're not supposed to do this at home. You'll be connecting directly. You won't see the instances at all. And you'll be connecting just to the shim. Mm-hmm. This is purely to get you a feel of what happens internally in a test environment.
Yeah, and so you just mentioned a shim, and let's just kind of step back for a second and explain that. So I'm guessing the shim is kind of a gateway thing, right? Because there's nothing happening on the client side. So we're connecting into the service, it hits a gateway, and it goes, which way do we go?
Yes.
And then you get routed directly to the master, unless the master has failed.
Yes.
And then the shim is what actually does the heartbeat communication between the two nodes in the background.
Yeah, so the way our architecture is that you will communicate to a DNS endpoint, and we guarantee that DNS endpoint will always take you to the master.
Yep.
We internally, the slave, always maintains a heartbeat with the master. And anytime the slave loses the heartbeat to the master, it promotes itself to be master. And that's how we make sure that there is always someone up.
Yep.
This gateway or shim that you go through is also the one that does authentication. It does SSL for you. Mm-hmm. That's where all that goodness comes from as well.
Brilliant.
So again, 13,001 was the slave, 13,000 was the master. What we're going to do here is, so now I'm going back to just connecting directly to the cache.
Mm-hmm.
We are connected there, and now we'll do something that's, let's imagine it's a patch Tuesday and Microsoft Azure is going around patching your servers.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes ahead and takes down 13,000, the zero machine. Mm-hmm. So it's actually rebooting right now.
Yep.
So what this means is that you will lose connection to your master, the slave will get propagate, all that goodness. Now, the reason I'm not hurrying back to the CLI is that it does take a while, even after rebooting, for it to actually go down. There is a command in Redis called time, which just pings the server and returns the time to you. So what this can take from a few seconds up to a minute for the node to go down.
Well, because this is running in cloud services, and in cloud services, you have the role entry point, and the role entry point has a shutdown where you can do a whole bunch of different things.
Yes.
So you're actually going and safely shutting down a lot of this.
So here's what happened, quickly. So you'll notice that at one point it failed.
Yep.
And now I'll reconnect. And it's reconnected again, and time succeeds. And what happened in that small time gap? Now, again, we were chatting here, 180 to 191.
Mm-hmm.
Within that time, the master went down, the slave came up as master, and your cache is up again.
Yep.
So from a user perspective, you saw a blip. Within those it shows up as 10 seconds here, but it might even have been as lower than that if you're actually writing in a loop.
And is that even 10 seconds? Because those are ticks, right? So that's almost in the millisecond range, isn't it?
That is, yeah.
Well, I guess it might be in the second range because it did actually take us some time.
Yeah, right? I think the lower ones are the millisecond ticks in.
That makes
so
sense.
So that's how it does it. The key point here being, for a few seconds, you'll see your cache going down. You won't be able to write to it, but you'll start being up again. And now, for those who are keeping tab, if you remember, our 13,001 was the slave earlier. Mm-hmm. So now if you do info replication, there, 13,001 is the master.
Yep.
And actually, if we try to connect to 13,000, it might not even be up yet because it's still rebooting there. So again, now you only have one node for a small period of time. The master will, what was the master, will come up and now become a slave, mm-hmm. sync up with the master, and again, you're good to go. You have one redundant node.
Brilliant.
So this was replication. So let's look at that a bit. I believe I have a cache which I've been running some load against. So we mm-hmm. should be able to alerts and monitoring.
Yep.
So if any cache, we at preview, we keep track of sets, gets. We keep track of, which I'll show you all of those.
And this is something that you can actually go in and look at over time. So we have this like analytical data sitting in the background.
Yes. So all you do is you create a cache, and this all gets handled for you.
Yeah.
So here we show you some data on the screen already. You're seeing number of hits and a few misses. You can choose to go to the next level of detail on it. So I clicked on it. Mm-hmm. It opens it up on a separate blade. Here, I can choose to modify the query we are using. Okay. And like you mentioned, I can do it for today. I can do it just for the past hour. Mm-hmm. I can also add a set of different commands. So today we do hits, miss, sets, gets, expired keys, evicted keys, and your memory usage, and your CPU usage. Mm-hmm. We'll be adding to this as we keep updating our preview.
So the evicted keys, for the people that are watching, that's if you actually go in the portal and reset your keys, and someone's trying to connect with an old key, that's what you're checking.
No, actually it's not. So
no?
It's
okay.
Not. This is more around...
Or session.
This actually is more around when you write to the cache. Mm-hmm. Once the cache starts hitting its max memory limit, it automatically starts evicting keys off the cache.
Okay.
So this is eviction
so
from
this
a
is
Redis
like
perspective.
From an actual Redis perspective.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And this is actually a good point, though. For there are a bunch of configurations you can do for Redis. In the preview, we host Redis with the default configuration. And the eviction policy is what they call volatile LRU.
Yep.
But we'll let you modify that down the line. So as the preview updates keep coming, you'll be able to modify these policies.
Okay.
And eviction is one of them. So now I just modified it to track a bunch of other items as well. So you get that for free. Like I mentioned, you get CPU memory for free. You also get the ability to set alerts. And I had a few set here beforehand. Mm-hmm. On hits, on eviction, on memory alert, you'll see the ones on eviction, which I say if an evicted key is more than 10.
Yeah.
And that's what you typically want to do. If you want to know if your cache is running too hot, if you're seeing too many evictions, then you're hitting your memory limit.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that I've never hit my evicted key.
Yeah.
But from a hits perspective, I said, let me know if I get more than 1,000 hits. And I hit that 4 hours back when I started running my load test.
Yeah.
So another key thing you can do is adding alerts and having them file for you and send you an email and all that goodness.
Great. So does this just send an email, or are there multiple ways? Like, can I get it to page someone or send a text message or something along those lines? Like,
so today, it sends an email, which you can then have page you as well.
Yep.
But we will also expose these programmatically so that you can then have just you can have the same alert fire up programmatically, be involved, a script fires off, does the right thing. So that whole end-to-end flow will be enabled.
Cool. Excellent.
So that was alerts.
Cool. So I mean, it's amazing that we have a whole bunch of metrics that you can go and track. And there's different ways that you can go and track that, like actually going and setting alerts to say, hey, this cache is running way too hot.
Yep.
We need to update the size that we have, or think about a solution of actually going in and sharding cache or anything along those lines. So that's really awesome. What are some of the patterns that you're seeing today of people using the Redis cache on Azure?
So we have, this again could be a 1 hour video session. I'll talk about a few,
yep.
but again, it's very application specific.
Yep.
But by broadly, the pattern that you see is a web application typically using a persistent storage, and then they put a cache in between, a distributed cache, mm-hmm. to get low latency, consistent low latency, and then there are different ways of how you populate the cache. There are scenarios where you can get data from persistent storage first and then put it in cache. So for future references, you go to the cache. There are scenarios where folks pre-populate the cache to begin with, yep. for they know that these are the type of data the users might need.
Yep.
I'll touch on a few scenarios that are representative, and then I can come back for more details. So one scenario I wanted to talk about was using cache as a secondary index onto table. Again, for anyone who's worked with tables, we hear scenarios around secondary indexes, and this is not the only way to do it, but I think this is a very relevant way of doing secondary indexes.
Yep.
So the scenario I have here is that we have 1 million rows in a table, mm-hmm. that has customer data, but that customer data is using a company ID as the primary key,
yep.
of the way the table is stored, the partitioning key. It is not, now if you want to query the data on something else besides the primary key,
yep.
you, for example, in this case, customer name, it can get expensive. One way of doing that, and which we show here, is that we have a pre-populated cache that maintains a list, which is now hashed based on on the key that we would like to be the primary key, which is customer name.
Yep.
So all these entries contain, in this case, the name, and then they in turn point to the entry in the table where that corresponding data exists.
Yeah.
So when you make a request for a particular name, we'll ask the cache.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hash table, so it comes back really quickly. That in turn tells us where to go and look for in the table. So we then in turn go and look for table, and we get that data. Mm-hmm. So we go cache, get the right location in table, get that data from table. And this still ends up being faster than just going to table,
yep.
and doing a non-primary index key on it. So I already have this application deployed on Azure websites.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in the video section notes, we'll go into details of how you can build this application, share code snippets. So I won't go into details here.
Yep. So just to kind of like re-go over the approach now that we see this, what we're saying is we're going to search for a customer.
Yes.
So we've gone, looked at the cache. Cache doesn't have anything in it. We then go to table storage, pull back information, save to the cache, and then send it off to the client.
Pretty much except for the previous thing, we've preloaded the cache. So what we've done is taken the entire 1 million records, and we've preloaded an index for those onto the cache.
Yeah.
Now, in spite of it being 1 million, I think my cache is like 10 MB.
Yeah.
So in this scenario, because it's heavy read, low write data, which doesn't change that frequently, it makes sense to just preload the indexes, but you could have done exactly what you're describing.
Yeah.
It could have been dynamic.
To go through this, we on application start, we go off to table storage, pull everything down, push in a cache, and then our application just goes reads the cache at will.
Yes. And a lot of people also do it independent of the application. So they will typically have a worker role which keeps pre-populating the cache once every 5 minutes anyway. So you don't even have to do it in your application. It can be done externally to the application.
Yeah.
So, again, all valid patterns. Yeah. We are choosing one pattern here.
Yeah, exactly. And to think of some of the features of Azure websites, your application lives out in the actual website itself. Going and refilling that cache can be a web job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not a bad demo. Maybe that's what I should do next. Yes. So we'll set up a web jobs demo to do that. So in this case, yes, I had a separate worker role, just go and pre-populate it. And you can figure out a way where you can use Redis PubSub to be informed when data changes and then go and repopulate the cache. A lot of architectural ways of doing it. But the key thing is, because access to the data is so fast in the cache, for one thing, you'll notice I can provide even autocomplete, because all I'm doing is looking for this data in the cache. I already have it indexed by customer name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it only by customer name. You can also maintain multiple indexes on the cache, so one by customer name, one by the department they work in, anything that could be a primary key, you can maintain multiple indexes.
Yep.
And now, when I go and search for that particular name, let's do both. And this may take a few seconds. Again, we are looking for a particular name on a million rows on table itself.
I'm loving this demo, because it gets both cache and goes direct to table storage. So you can see the benefits of using a cache in front of other services.
Absolutely.
For actually getting that
and you
that
can play with
response.
Numbers. I'll show one where, especially with 1 million, the difference is very obvious.
Yeah.
I have one where it comes down to 50,000 entries. Now you're seeing a factor of 1 or 2 where it still might be worth it. In this particular case, it took 45 milliseconds.
Yep.
And again, this 45 milliseconds is going to cache, getting an entry, going to table. So it involves one cache and one table lookup.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this, as I guess a .NET and a client heat sub, these are client numbers, so they those will improve as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll see it's performing by a factor.
Yeah.
So I've hit this search once more and it'll come back with numbers soon. This was customer based.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this case, all we were maintaining was a list of customers. It was just a list, just a hash table.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was 52 milliseconds, the second try, and it took 18 seconds on table.
Yep.
Now, like I mentioned, with Redis, you always get itchy to use data structures as well, because you have so much power in your hands. So now what I've done for products is that products, we've broken down into categories. I think I have around 20 categories. So it's a million records broken into 20 categories.
Mm-hmm.
So you have around 1/20th of a million in each category. So you're searching in a smaller set.
Yep.
But there, too, cache can add value. But what we've also done here is, in this case, not only do we maintain the indexes, but we maintain them in a sorted list.
Yes.
So now you can do start doing stuff like, give me anything in the price range from 10,000 to 10,080.
Mm-hmm.
Again, directly search tables. So this gives you a feel of scenarios that you can potentially do there. You'll notice the difference is not that large anymore because the set on table is much smaller. It's 1/20th of the one for the previous example. But still, there's a great benefit of going directly to cache.
Yep.
And especially if you were relying on something that was just give me the top 100 items.
Yes.
Right? Again, a common leaderboard scenario in gaming. Because you maintain And here again, this came back in 0.8 seconds and 4 seconds on the other end. So you get the feel of, with data structures, you can get secondary indexes, and then you can sort and list those data structures as well.
Yeah. And this is great for, like you said earlier, and this really kind of fits it, like the shopping cart example, where you're going out, you're saving cart items, and you're not, well, it'd be nice to have them persisted, but you're saving those items and returning them back, so your customer is getting a great experience as they're going through and shopping.
Yeah.
And then when they do actually hit that order button, you send that off to, you know, a queue or some other process that kind of decouples them from the payment, and they get back, they're all happy, payment goes through, and stuff gets sent in the mail eventually.
No, makes sense. And exactly what you described would be what our session state with automatic backing up to table would implement. We write to cache, but we also asynchronously write it to table.
Yep.
And so you'd have persistent storage, but also the performance characteristics of Redis cache.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited to play around with the Redis cache. Do you have anything else to kind of talk to us about today?
Yes, I had one more.
Brilliant.
I had one more pattern because I know folks on this show love SignalR.
Yes, SignalR.
We can quickly do this. Here I have an application. It's a typical SignalR application. Again, we'll put details to a blog post that goes into details of this in the video notes. A SignalR application, again, I'll run it on localhost. What this means naturally is multiple clients can now hit this host, mm-hmm. and all of them will be synchronized, but they have to hit this particular host, right?
Yeah.
I cannot have people online play with me while I'm doing this because this is only localhost.
Yeah.
So a typical SignalR application that runs great. But what if I want an Azure website to someone to be able to go to a different server
mm-hmm.
or a scaled server, be able to hit different instances and still have it talk to my local instance as well?
Yeah.
So here what we're seeing is, again, typical SignalR,
mm-hmm.
your website, you have multiple clients talking to it, all is goodness. But as you have multiple instances, as you see those multiple green planes, if your client happens to hit a different server, it will not be getting the fireworks from another instance of that server. And that's where Redis comes in.
Yeah.
So Redis acts as the backplane for SignalR, which then broadcasts it to all the instances and then back to the client.
Yeah.
Oh. So that's what we'll be demoing here.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've demoed that before as well on this show.
Yep.
What we haven't demoed is it running with live Azure, and that's what we'll do today. So now I'll jump into Visual Studio, back to our project, and we'll see how easy this backplane is to do. So all I need to do is add the NuGet package for Microsoft.asp.net, not asp.net.microsoft.
Yes.
ASP.net, Microsoft.asp.net. You set up the right Owen startup task, and you register a global host.dependency resolver. Use Redis. Again, you folks have seen this multiple times now. You provide a host name, you provide a port, you provide a key.
Yep.
And you provide a channel name. That is the channel that all of these will communicate via in the PubSub world of Redis.
Okay. So one thing before we move on here is you just want to flip that back to home so we can actually see that line of code again?
Absolutely.
So what we're doing here is SignalR has the ability to have multiple backplanes, and Redis just happens to be one of them.
Absolutely.
You could also do Service Bus. I think there's another one, but I can't quite remember.
I know there are a few. I don't remember.
There's a few. So what we're doing is we're actually going and doing dependency injection of our actual backplane code, and that's what this global host.resolve or dependency resolver is doing. And it's saying, use that Redis backend, and here's the credentials to go connect to it.
Yes.
And then it will go wire up the Redis provider and use that to be able to go and serve up these the different pieces of data, which are in this case are fireworks,
yes,
off to the different clients on different instances, or that are connected to different instances of different servers.
Absolutely right. Yes. And I'll quickly just show what this looks like now that we have this connected. So we'll relaunch it. And this time, you should be able to remotely connect to the local host as well. So I'll launch the application.
Okay.
So now we have Azure website on the right, local host on the left, and both are connected to the same Redis server. So you'll see fireworks fly off.
Nice.
And my mouse hung.
Cool. So, and this is really cool to show off as well, because not only are you connecting between localhost and a server in Azure, so Azure websites, but you're actually showing it from both Chrome and IE. So it shows like interoperability of having the WebSocket connection.
And I'll just do one more piece to it while we are at it.
Okay.
It's not only that, because it's eventually going to Redis, and I do want to bring that point out. So what I'll do is I'll also connect to that particular Redis server that
Excellent.
They're using, and then we can then subscribe to the same channel. I believe we called it Fireworks. It is case sensitive.
Okay.
And now, when I do Fireworks here, there, you see the message coming
cool.
to the same channel. This is a remote server on Azure,
yep.
and this is the channel we are all listening to.
Yeah, so that's really neat, because that's a way to go and debug this when you're actually working
Absolutely.
With the client. Is you can have it, you can have your CLI tools connected to the same Redis cache, and go play around on your site and actually see all the messages come through, so you know what kind of communication is going back
yes.
and forth. That's an awesome demo.
Okay. Love doing it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for showing this off today.
My
I'm
pleasure.
Incredibly excited. I hope everyone out there is excited. So thank you all as well for joining us, and we'll see you next time here on WebCamps TV.
Thank you.